Hey, we need your support to keep the podcasts flowing. Go to explorationsearlylearning.com/support to learn how. One of the big things you can do is shop Amazon with the link we provide. You buy your cat food, you buy your kids' books, you buy whatever it is you buy on Amazon, you pay the regular price. We get a small percentage of it. Everybody wins. A lot of people are doing it. It really supports the shows, and we really appreciate it. Give it a try. Thanks. Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. In studio with me, Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
And Tasha Johnson.
Aloha.
And today we're talking about Magic 8, the Magic 8 ball. You shake it up and
you ask questions.
Is that what we're talking about?
You can use the Magic 8 ball to find out if the teachers in the room have the Magic 8 characteristics.
We get a custom Magic 8 ball with the Magic 8 characteristics. So what are we really, it's not a Magic 8 ball, what are we really talking about? What Magic 8?
Well, there's a summary of a research report that was released back last fall in October of 2017, published in Child Development, found that 8 key teacher actions can make the difference between a mediocre preschool classroom and an excellent one. I'm sure this came across many of our listeners' radar. I know I read it and put it up on my social media platforms. So what ended up happening was that there was a Vanderbilt University researchers who spent 2 years gathering some data, and what they found out is that they had very disappointing results with their previous research, which was a multi-year study published in 2015 that showed that Tennessee's state preschool program had no effect, or in some cases a negative effect, on participants by the time they reached third grade.
Okay, so then they took that research and threw it away and didn't publish it.
Because they didn't want anybody to know.
Because it didn't have the results that they were expecting or wanted?
No, actually, in a very admirable a turn of events.
Let's pause for a second. The reason that's admirable is because a lot of stuff gets trash canned instead of published.
Well, yeah, you think you have this billion-dollar, well, I don't know if it's billions, but at least $1 million probably pre-K funded program, and then you find out that you've put all this effort and energy and money and resources into, you know, bragging about it, and then at the end of the day,
it's not
doing anything, and in some cases, it could be harmful.
Yeah, and this all goes back to what we've talked about before, about experts and about being able to trust your sources and those kind of things, is knowing that in probably, I was going to say some, but in a fair amount of research, if the results aren't what they want, the place research gets published is in the trash can. It gets set aside and ignored, and then what we end up with is an incomplete view of what's going on, because those results, although they may be not be what the researcher was looking for or the funder
or expecting
was looking for or expecting, if they don't get published, then they don't contribute. And as we're going to find out, sometimes that information leads to valuable insights and some forward motion in our profession.
Yeah, and she is quoted in the article as saying that it wasn't acceptable to her to just say, we found out these outcomes. You know, she was like, do you just say we found this out, or do you roll up your sleeves and try and do something about it? And decided that the only ethical answer, and I appreciated the use of that word ethical,
absolutely,
was to do something about it. So she was approached by the Nashville Superintendent of Public Schools and said, how can you help us improve the program, the Nashville's preschool programs? Mm-hmm. So the researchers partnered with the principals, teacher coaches, and teachers in 3 different Nashville early learning centers, collected data on teacher actions and student achievement across 26 preschool classrooms. So a total of 840 children were in the study, and not to read you this whole article, but the partnership, they said, at times was fraught. Not all of the teachers were excited about multiple observations and multiple feedback sessions with the researchers. So they regrouped and said that the teachers were facing too many demands on their time, which made it hard to take in all the data. So to address the issue, the research team narrowed its focus on 8 classroom actions that they found had the largest effect on student success.
What are they?
They're the Magic Eight.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm just going to read through them quickly, and then we'll see where that goes, okay. And Noah will circle back to probably most of them. Number one, reduce time spent in transition. I bought into this article the minute I read number one. Uh-huh. And not to reduce, you know, their work to one comment, but it was like, well, duh.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Number one was reduce transitions. Number two, improve the level of instruction, which doesn't mean do more of it. It meant asking children open-ended questions and asking them to reflect. Number three, creating a positive climate. Number four, increasing time teachers listen to the children. Shut up. Plan sequential activities. And to elaborate, when children participated in activities that followed an order, a logical order, like doing a puzzle, writing a message, they found that the children engaged in higher level thinking. Promote cooperative interactions between children who had the opportunities to work with their peers. Foster high levels of child involvement. Children are better at reading, comprehension, vocabulary, and math when they are actively involved in an activity. Surprise. Provide math opportunities. Children who take part in multi-part math problems, and have opportunities to discuss math concepts are better prepared for school. So those were the eight. Mm-hmm. And what I liked about how it wrapped up was in that there was some comments from the Nashville mayor, and forgive me, I'm not sure if this woman would still be the mayor at this juncture, but Nashville Mayor Megan Berry said that the goal right now for four-year-olds should be to get them interested and engaged in learning and to remember they're only four.
You gotta like that.
You gotta like that.
And so of those eight...
How many of them are relationship-based,
well,
Jeff?
Yeah. And as I read through them, I'm kind of like, duh. It's about relationships, and it's about some pretty basic, pretty common-sense stuff that we've touched on at least one or two times here on the podcast in our 400 and some episodes.
You know what? I guarantee that if listeners did nothing other than number one, and like if that was a baby step for a majority of our listeners, behavior problems would go away.
Their stress level would go down.
So
just reducing the number of transitions is going to make a classroom flow a lot smoother.
And so if you're thinking about this out there, or your program is thinking about trying to reduce transitions, I challenge you to grab a notebook and you and the other staff spend a day just jotting down how many transition times that you actually have in your day. And if you're a multiple classroom program, how many transitions each classroom have, because it's probably a lot more than
you
think of, because we think of transition times, kids showing up in the morning and then going to lunch and then going home in the afternoon. But there are all these smaller transitions throughout the day, from activity to activity. One thing we know is that for kids to get into play, they need time. And the more transition times you have in the day, the more time is eaten up
By waiting
and hanging around and standing in line and all those kind of things, the things that come with transitioning and are taken away from play.
Deb Lawrence, one of my former professors, and she also does workshops and writes books and stuff, and she does a workshop where she has those big, huge post-its on the wall, and she has everybody get up and write down their daily schedule. Like, you just write it up. Don't think of it. Just what's your schedule? 7 o'clock. Just write it down. And then she says, now circle when you get a headache. And what was funny is that one time a woman like literally circled like the whole thing. But the point of the exercise is that as you go through and circle, like when the times are stressful for you, the common denominator is that it's usually transition times. Mm-hmm. So her advice is realizing that there might be a few non-compromisables, you know, like if depending on where your program is, you got to maybe walk to the cafeteria or, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. recess, mm-hmm. transition outside. But then go back and look at how many of those other ones are really necessary.
Yeah. Yeah,
and most of them aren't.
Yeah, and if for the ones that are necessary, there are probably steps you can take to ease them, to speed them up, to make them a little bit less
stressful
hectic.
For everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to the story you told about the hey, why don't the kids just go outside? Whole idea. Not everybody, the whole class, in a lot of situations, they don't have to move in a herd all at the same time in a straight line and those kind of things. So that one is so valuable because not only does it make that headache go away, it frees up time for the more important stuff.
Let me actually read what it all says in the article. So Magic 8 number 1 was reduced time spent in transition. Why? Time moving from one activity to another is time when the children aren't learning, aren't engaged, which also increases the likelihood of, wait for it, negative behavior.
Yeah, because transition time is boring. And
yeah,
they
so
look
I'm
going
to poke you.
They look for ways to entertain themselves. But Lisa says it's not entertaining, but in our transition time, we sing the walking song and we do poems and we count the squares.
Oh, you mean aren't learning or aren't engaged? So you're saying,
yeah. So we do those things in our transition time when we count the tiles on the ceiling while we're walking down the hallway.
And I would say if that's something that makes that non-compromisable transition a little bit more, you know, smooth, fine. But if that's your rationale for having 15 transitions before snack, no, that's too many.
Yeah, and the reality is if you're counting the ceiling tiles every damn day,
They're gonna kind of, yeah.
Eventually they're gonna get bored of it and know how many ceiling tiles there are.
End. 15.
And if they're
there's
not,
15 now I can hit you.
Yeah. If they're not inviting it, if they're not the creators of that learning like they are in their play, it's not really as valuable as it is for them to be doing something else.
Agreed.
To me, this is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But I also know that if you're currently in a program where somebody has made you think or you came to the table thinking that you had to have a schedule chopped up in a 20-minute time blocks and a math section and a science section and a everybody on the carpet section, you know that's three transitions before 9 o'clock. And what might it start look like when we start mashing some of those time frames up to start baby stepping? You know, we're not telling you to throw your schedule in the trash. We're telling you to start thinking about how many unnecessary transitions might be present in your current environment.
Next
program.
One.
Number 2, improve the level of instruction. I'll read the whole thing. Asking children open-ended inferential questions and asking them to reflect on what they've learned or make predictions based on what they know improves student retention of new material and better prepares them for kindergarten. Open and let's whittle this down. That's a lot of language. Open-ended questions means asking children questions that have more. They're not just yes or no questions.
What do you think about?
Yes.
Instead of
tell me about.
Yeah, and so it's just stuff that gets you yes and no answers. Because what that's doing is not only asking them to think and generate an answer, it's also giving them an opportunity to practice using language.
Mm-hmm.
Yes and no questions get you yeses and nos.
And they're tests.
Yeah. And you're testing them. And the open-ended questions get you more language, more conversation. Again,
you're building relationships with those open-ended questions much better.
Absolutely. And sometimes the open-ended questions you choose can be those testy kind of questions. What color is just that kind of that kind
well,
of?
Well, I jotted down some of the bullet points that we have addressed in the past. You know,
okay.
Stop asking children questions that you know the answers to.
There we go.
I mean, that's just cut and dry. And start really, really thinking about how many fake questions you ask the children. And sometimes you don't even realize you're doing it, but, you know, a fake question, you know, like implying that there's a choice when there's not. Are you ready to go in is my favorite fake mm-hmm. question. You guys know that. You know, are you ready for bed?
Nope.
And they're like,
no.
But then we're like, get on your mat. You know, why did you ask if really
there wasn't a choice?
Yeah, in those situations, it should be we're ready to go in. Or I'm ready for you to go in. And get the hell out of your mat, you little...
Or it could just be line up.
Oh, yeah.
It's a statement.
It could be that.
It's time to go inside.
Yeah. making a statement. Yeah. If there's not a choice, don't pretend that there is one. In my playbook, of course, I spend quite a few pages on what I call the discussion destroyers and things that we unintentionally do, right? We're not mean, we're not malicious, we're not looking to undermine relationships and looking to undermine conversation, but sometimes we feel pressed for time and we forget that that conversation is way more important than snack being on time.
Yeah, yeah. And when you build relationships with kids, you build a greater understanding of them, and that creates a reservoir of better questions you can be asking them. When you know about their family and their pet and their interests and their fears and these kind of things, it creates more real questions that you can build into your conversations with them. And that bit of depth is what gives us a little bit more value than episodes back when we looked at the box curriculum. There were questions in there, but they were pretty surface, pretty
sanitized, yeah. Dare I say, or shallow?
Yeah.
Necessarily either springboarding to something with more depth. Yeah. Or avoiding something that might be too deep.
Yeah, and so when you get locked in and you're trying to use some prepackaged questions that come from something like a box curriculum, that kind of thing, it doesn't... Cookie cutter, yeah, that's good. Doesn't give you the opportunity to go as deep as you can when you really know the children and have a honest relationship with them.
The other thing I want to point out is that you need to be okay in not knowing, even though you're the adult.
Oh, definitely.
Like to ask real, I think, honest inquiry based questions, if that's even a phrase, is to realize that I'm asking because I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes that's scary for us as adults. We feel like we need to have all the answers and
because
know everything.
We're the teacher.
Yeah.
Yes.
And saying I don't know is fine in and of itself. Following that up with a I don't know, let's figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Is an invitation to science and an invitation to everything that we want them to, a higher order thinking, everything we want them to be contemplating.
And I would even flip this and say that another layer to this is being willing to receive the children's honest questions, right? So the child asking an honest question that we're like, you know what, I'm not really sure, let's go here, could open up an entirely huge...
Yeah.
Platform for discussion,
yes. Yeah.
Too.
And we know that as kids get into the elementary grades, there's a lot of stress and anxiety and desire to always be right, because that's what school often rewards, is the right answer. And so a lot of kids keep quiet and sit back and don't contribute because they're afraid of offering up a wrong answer. When we create an environment where they see adults not having the answer all the time, or having to do some more research before they get the right answer.
Or being wrong.
Yeah, or, yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Having to change your mind.
And there's a great value in that. It's practice for real life.
Mm-hmm.
Let's knock one more of these out in a little bit more depth and then break and come back with another episode of this.
Okay. Number three, create a positive climate. Using positive language to reinforce desired behavior rather than disapproving of specific student actions has a positive effect on a child's ability to self-regulate, which is a lot of words of saying, telling them what you want them to do instead of what you don't want them to do.
Does this mean praising them and telling
them
they're
angels? Well, I was
angels?
Just going to say, yeah, I don't know if...
Don't go overboard.
I don't think that this is implying that we need a rewards cupboard and a sticker cabinet. You can use positive language to reinforce desired behavior without it turning into, you know, a behavior Skinner model.
I think we get in the habit of defaulting to the rewards and the stickers when language can be just more powerful and more beneficial. And the whole positive spin is that we approach them as if they're competent and capable people who we're trying to help grow instead of little wild creatures who we're trying to control.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been better if grow and control rhymed. I have to work on the language. But That one's pretty self.
We're all just so you know, we're all reading it again to see if we're missing something, or if there's something more maybe to add to it. I'm thinking of Carol Dweck's work of how do you comment and encourage the effort as opposed to, you know, good job, mm-hmm. you know, and
just a rote good job and.
Well, versus well,
super super work, making it specific.
Yeah, exactly.
I think making eye contact when you're talking to them and encouraging,
sure,
is important. Not just
slapping a sticker on the nice job.
Yeah, and, yeah. You get a sticker, go put it up there without even looking at the kid and what they did.
So that more that relationship component too.
And the whole disapproving does hinder self-regulation. If you're one of those kids and you're all. Everything you do in your preschool classroom seems to piss off the adult in the room. It's really hard to self-regulate because what you're trying to do is you're doing stuff to get attention, and then that stuff gets negative attention, but it got attention, and so you keep doing,
so I keep doing
stuff
it.
And you keep getting attention, but it's not the kind of attention.
I would be hesitant to count how many episodes ago it was, but when we talked about what can he do? What is he good at?
Uh-huh.
You know, what have you locked and loaded on what you're not wanting that child to be doing, and what would happen if you pulled back and started paying attention to what that child is bringing to the table?
He sure is good at crawling under my skin and scratching my last nerve.
He is, and that's a good starting spot. Now come up with 10 more. What else is he or she good at?
Yeah, it'd be episode number 405. What are they good at?
Thank you.
You are welcome.
So should we wrap this one up and then come back with the other five?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yep.
I subtracted.
You did.
This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill. Back soon with another episode. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Laters.
Talk to you soon.
's been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.
Oh.
Hey, Jeff here. If you like the podcast, you might dig this. Dan Hodgins is going to join Lisa Murphy and I for 3 gigs in 2018. We're going to be in Portland, Oregon, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Madison, Wisconsin. We're calling it the Talking Play Tour because that's what we're going to be doing, talk and play. You can learn more at playvolutionhq.com/events. Hope to see you there.